This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. Mask of Guilt, Mask of Illumination, Book 1 is out. We all wear masks, some of us to hide our guilt. Lady Fenari, lost in the malaise of depression, finds purpose with a group of all women thieves, the Crack Gems. Intrigue, romance, betrayal, and adventure swirls around her in this epic fantasy tale. Today, I'm joined by Sydney Williams. He is the author of the action thriller novel Fool's Run, a Cy Riordan novel. How are you doing today, Sydney?
I am good, thank you. It's a nice temperature today and quasi-sunny at the moment, so can't complain.
Awesome. So I always like to start these out with a fun question or two, Sydney.
Are you
a cat person or a dog person?
Let me answer that by saying that I have a cat beside me at the moment, who may slap me to demand my attention at any second. That is my cat, Zoe. I grew up with dogs, but my wife was a cat person and converted me many years ago.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. My mom tried, but I still don't like cats.
Have had cats for years, and we have just one now, but have had more over time.
All right. So, Sydney, how long have you wanted to be an author?
I think probably before I could do anything but make letters. I began telling stories by looking at pictures in my coloring books, and kindergarten, I had learned to make letters, but had not learned to write yet or read yet. But I would take a coloring book and have my mom spell words for me, and I would tell my own stories and rewrite the captions in the coloring books in those days. So I always, there was always something there, I think. And as I moved forward in time, we had actually an old manual Smith Corona typewriter first around the house. I had older parents, and so their tech stretched back a bit, and you had to pound the keys really hard. But I began writing stories about comic book characters, or kind of my own pastiches of comic book characters fairly early on, and then by high school and college I was writing stories and hoping to do something in the writing world.
I gotcha. I started writing about junior high, and then it was just a bunch of terrible stuff, that most of which I've thrown away.
Yeah, that was me as well. A lot of notebooks that were me trying to formulate stories early on.
Gotcha. So, let's bring us out to your current story, right? The one you wanted to talk about today, it's called Fool's Run. And it's a thriller about an ex-cop named Cy Riordan, is that right?
Correct.
All right, let's tell us about Cy Riordan. Like, how did he become an ex-cop? What is he going to be thrilled about in this novel?
Well, Cy became an ex-cop when he went to jail.
That'll do it.
Yeah. He and a partner were acting outside of their jurisdiction, and string of events that were sort of retaliatory on his partner's in his partner's case led to a shooting incident, a gun battle, and his partner was killed. And so Cy, was left holding the bag for all of it, and had some some responsibility that he kind of went along with his partner. But anyway, when we meet him, he has served time, and he is out and is in New Orleans. I'm originally from Louisiana. He's in New Orleans and not finding work, finding he's not too popular as an ex-cop. And he knows other cops who have security firms now and things like that, but nobody wants to hire him. And so he's approached by an attorney who is a special counsel, which is an actual term, but she's sort of quote-unquote special counsel. She kind of works on the shady side of things, and she approaches Cy with a really ugly job, but it's the only offer he's got, and he's got a daughter in potentially dangerous situation with his ex-wife, so he has to take it, and finds himself pitted against this businessman who has a dark past and is kind of leaning toward some legitimacy, but is also still, has fingers in a lot of dark corners, and so Cy just winds up in a really dire situation, and so hence the thrill of it all, trying to survive.
Gotcha. Yeah, that does sound like quite a complicated little situation he's got himself in.
Yeah, very, very quickly finds himself in a mess.
Yeah, so we got Cy. So who are kind of our bad guys of the story?
The bad guy is a guy named Valentine Alexeva, and he has a couple of assistants. One who is kind of his more intellectual sidekick, and then he also has a tough guy, brutal sidekick. And he is from the Russia realm, and there are things in his life maybe that suggest he has ties back to very old and ancient Russian magic. And so while he's a criminal, there are also hints of other things going on with him. And facing sort of this master manipulator, Valentine Alexeva becomes quite a big big challenge. Valentine, it's interesting. You said, you thought at first when you saw Sydney written down that that was maybe a woman's name. And often Sydney with a Y is a woman's name these days. And actually, my dental hygienist is named Sydney, and she is a woman. But Valentine is a man's name. And interestingly, one reviewer or another said, well, in this big mistake here, the villain, this tough villain, has a female name. But it is a female name, and ties back to his Russian roots and everything. And he has enough friends in high places and things like that to be a real challenge for a dirty ex-cop.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you like the female version of Valentine in Russia is Valentina, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so just because it's not really like a common male name in English, I don't think. But
probably not.
But it is, it is in Slavic tongues.
Yeah.
It's much more common.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay, so that's pretty neat. So we got our bad guy. Is there a femme fatale since we got a thriller going on?
Rose, the attorney who gets Cy into all this is not a pure femme fatale. She's sort of an ally, but Rose is sort of in that that realm. And then Cy winds up assembling a bit of a team to accomplish his goals. And to backtrack a little bit, in the classic. Classic detective style, you have, of course, Dashiell Hammett's The Continental Op, and famously Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe. There is one of the most famous Continental Op novels is Red Harvest, in which the op goes into this really dirty Union warfare town and decides to clean things up himself. And he's not necessarily solving a mystery as much as he is looking at a desperate situation and dealing with it. And that becomes what Cy focuses on. And Publishers Weekly called it a thriller come caper, because it's sort of in the style, too, of things like even in Donnelly Westlake's funny caper stories. What Cy thinks he is, initially going to have to do proves not to be the case. And so he has to put a team together and do a little bit of a con game and a little bit of a high adventure type situation to work things out. And he involves a call girl that he encounters on the streets of New Orleans fairly early in the story, named Crystal, who has a good bit of acting ability because she, sometimes might have been known to provide a girlfriend experience for her clients. So has is able to step into a lot of roles, which is very useful. And Cy has, of course, since he has done time, even though he did time in a protective custody unit, as they do in Louisiana and probably everywhere for law enforcement officers serving time, he has ties on the darker side of crime. And the guy that he was in prison with has some cousins, nephews that have a quasi-legitimate business, but also can get you, things that you might need if you're in a criminal enterprise, and wind up being very helpful to Cy. And they are the McCluskeys, Archie and Kenny. Arch is the ex-military half of the brotherhood there, and has a lot of military training, which he can share with Cy, even though Cy is a former cop and has had tactical training and things like that. And Kenny is sort of a wonder kind of in a way, but also kind of very childlike. But Kenny is big and tough and helpful. And so with all of those characters, Cy has an interesting team to work with, and everybody brings a little something to the equation to help him in dealing with Alex Eva.
All right. So it sounds like you kind of are building together like not just a novel, but like a series. You're getting like characters in place that can be useful for other types of stories.
It is planned that way. And indeed, I'm working on the sequel now called Long Waltz, which will find Cy in Florida, actually. And the McCluskeys will join him there ultimately as he works on a slightly different case, but is not unlike what he was doing before. He's up against very powerful people. And is in a bit of a subservient role as he tries to infiltrate actually a film set and deal with power brokers from Hollywood and tough stars and stars that want to stay stars and are desperate to keep their position and all that. And he's looking for a missing person in the midst of all that. And I think his team will continue to find him as we move forward, or he will continue to draw on his team as needed.
So, Sydney, what do you think it takes to make a really good like action thriller story?
I think you need certainly danger and an ongoing sense of dread and threat, and hopefully Alex Eva provides that in Fool's Run, even when he's not on stage, if you will.
Right. His shadow, right?
Exactly. And I think things need to be off kilter in the thriller world, almost from the beginning. And the character has to be struggling to keep his head above water, to navigate around the stones that are in the stream ahead of him or whatever. And certainly a big threat, an ongoing threat, and things need to keep going wrong for the hero. And things need to be, we always need a sense that the hero could lose this or could suffer big losses. It's said these are first person novels, and so you know it's said that the dangerous thing about a first person narrator is you know he's probably not going to die unless it's William Holden in Sunset Boulevard, but who is dead when the story begins and still narrates it. But
I've seen a movie where like the narrator is already like the movie starts with the narrator telling how they died.
Yeah,
and it's just telling how they got to that point.
Yeah, but usually you can assume if you have a first person narrator, he's going to come out alive at the end. But if there are you know enough things that could go wrong for the hero and enough things at stake, you know, we need to feel he might not win.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think that's present with Cy, you know, that things you know, could go quickly south for him. Or, you know, he could get far, far less than he wants by the end of the story, since there are several things that he needs to accomplish.
Yeah,
a little vague. I should note, I should be for your listeners and you alike, I'm being a little vague because there are quite a few twists in this story.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
And kind of obfuscating size objectives a bit, just so if anybody picks it up, they won't you know have a couple of big things already spoiled for them.
Of course, yeah.
It's kind of fun. Maybe one piece of advice is don't write a book that could be very very easily spoiled by giving it a synopsis. But
oh gosh, I was looking at a book series. So like I think I had just read the first book and I really liked it, and then I accidentally like clicked on the third book, and like the first line of the third book spoiled the ending of the second book like on the blurb, and I'm like, oh, something's bad going to happen to this character. I'm like,
yeah. That's the danger of series too, I think. You know, and there's always the danger you know, a lot of times you will pick up a series book and they will, as you say, in the narrative, it will summarize, and sometimes it will oversummarize, and you like you're saying, you've picked up one, three or four books down. You're like, oh, okay, well, that guy.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, that guy's going to die. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff like that, but I actually, you know, the one of the worst things I saw was there's a TV show. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It was called Stargate Universe.
I don't know that I've ever seen an episode of that one. I have seen, you know, things in the
series. Well, I was kind of really into it, even though I kind of knew, like, the second season, like, they had got two seasons greenlit and then were canceled, so there's only ever going to be these two seasons. And so I kind of knew that. But anyway, so, like, there's a character I really like, and the episode ends with them, like, in mortal danger, like, they're about to be murdered. How are they going to get out of this? And then it's like, next time on Stargate Universe, she's dead and they're hunting for the killer. I'm like, are you kidding me? Why not just kill her at the end of the episode if you're going to spoil it in the teaser for the next episode?
And let that spoil.
Like, and then I never watched another episode of Stargate Universe because I was so annoyed about that.
Yeah, it can. A little thing like that can do it.
And like, I mean, and like I said, I was already de-investing because like I knew the show wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they filmed it all and then they got canceled, so they didn't even like have like an ending set up. So it was just going to end on like some cliffhanger. So I was like. It's like, yeah. That's yeah, they were really confident that the show would be a success.
Well, you know, the franchise had gone for so long. Because that's like the last one with the guy from the Full Monty, isn't it? Carlisle? Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so they had a choice. They could have done another season of, like, Atlantis, which was really popular still. And like, no, this new show is going to be amazing. We want two seasons of it, and we'll just end Atlantis on, like, a high note. Which they did. So Atlantis got a good ending.
Yeah.
And then Stargate Universe was trying to be like Stargate Lost.
Mm.
And with the whole like flashbacks and episodes, and it was, you know, very serial, and it was very different from the action adventure of the week show that was the previous two ones. And apparently the audience, I liked it, but the audience didn't, and it tanked.
Interesting. Yeah, I it was, you know, there's so much Stargate that was on my list, you know, when it was airing, but I go, well, I need to, you know, finish 26 seasons of the other series.
Yeah, well, I mean,
think about that. And by that time, like you say, it was gone. So
SG-1 has like 10 seasons and 2 movies, and it does a good job wrapping it all up. The 2 movies wrap it up, the show, after the 10th season.
Now, I say, I've never seen all of SG-1, but I do like SG-1 quite a bit.
Yeah, it started to turn that like Farscape there at the end because they lost like some of the main characters and they replaced them with like the Farscape like main leads.
Yeah, Benjamin Browder, yeah.
And they also had Claudia Black too. She was showing up too. So.
Yeah, I did not realize that, but I knew Benjamin Browder joined the cast, and is it Richard Dean Anderson?
He had like been getting less and less in the show. Like in the 7th season, they were like they had to like film their shows like 2 episodes at a time, and they would just film all his stuff for those 2 episodes 1 week, mm-hmm. so that he can have them the next week off, and then they would film all the other stuff that way they could still have him on the show. And then on season 8 he was like even more reduced, and then he was just like he would just do guest appearances for the rest of the show after that,
advisory role or whatever.
He wanted to spend more time in California with his grandkids.
So
you're working on the sequel to Fool's Run. Is there anything else you got in the work?
I keep a couple of things, going. And what I'm doing now, I kind of have outlines going. Everybody would like to write faster. I think I'm trying to really, I am sort of a blend of plotter and pantser, if you hear those terms kicked around. First couple of books I wrote, I was pure pantser. You know, I would start writing and see where the stories went. And then I wrote for Pinnacle back in the day, and reached a point where you would sell the next book by writing the outline. And so I became an outliner. After that, and in more recent years, I've worked with outlines. It gives you, a good bit of control. And there's still some things that surprise you. But I'm kind of trying to have a couple of projects heavily outlined while I work. I would like to do at least 3 books about Psy and tell, an arc, and then maybe write some other things and then come back and, add to the Psy canon as I go. But one thing I'm outlining is a sort of a gothic set in the 30s, and involves a young woman. It's the 30s, the Depression, and so she has some art school training, but she's not really working as an artist, and she was kind of geared to be a curator or, work in museums, and that hasn't happened. And an artist is killed or dies in a fire, and she is brought in to catalog the works of his that have survived, and there are some paintings there with mysterious properties, and kind of draws her more and more into his world, and she has to investigate his backstory, and so spooky, isolated heroine in a decrepit mansion, and she's living in the guest house, which is not damaged by fire, and befriended by a local attorney who is representing the estate, and see where that goes. So I'm outlining that, and would like to write a story about some characters lost in the wilderness, and it is a national park, but there are some historic things that have been incorporated into the park once they get lost there, and they unlock some mysteries and find a mysterious girl in the woods, and some things happen from there. So those are both in the outlining stages. And I like to stay busy with short stories. And so I've got a couple of things in the works. And I wrote a very brief short story, maybe under 2,000 words, that I'm shopping around right now. But sometimes something just comes together kind of nicely and perfectly in the very short form. And I'm really happy with what happened with that. And I'm shopping that around now. It's submitted and waiting. With short stories, it's kind of an eternal wait to see if it's going to be accepted or not.
Yeah, I used to do that. I wish I had time to write more short stories, but I think I wrote one at the end of last year. And that was, I think, And that's about all I managed last year, and I haven't written any this year.
I enjoy the short form. In fact, I find it, you know, some of the most satisfying writing I do because it's so contained, and it, you know, you can get as close to perfection as you can get with a short story. A novel, you know, you're perpetually going back over it and finding things you'd like to tweak. And short story, you know, if it's 20 pages, you can pretty much get all of the, get it as perfect as you feel like you desire to. I guess all writers are perfectionists. You hear things like Ray Bradbury would have a story published in Weird Tales, and then when it was time to put it in an anthology, he would polish it again.
I just polished my first novel because it's getting put in a big bundle. It's like me and my editor were both kind of newbies, so there's some little weird stuff, mostly commas.
Yeah, those are challenging, and inevitably you look back, and I can look back at books I wrote in I started writing in the 80s, and I can look back and I can realize that is written by the person I was then. You know, you can see the voice, and it will trigger memories of the events around you that influence what you were writing. And I think it's always about moving forward in writing mainly, and keeping, you know, getting as close to perfect as you can, but always, and not getting too bogged down, but also always moving forward.
All right. So where can our listeners connect with you on the internet, Sydney?
I have a presence just about everywhere. Maybe a few places not. SidIsAlive.com is my website, and there are gateways to my Instagram feed and my Twitter feed there. You can find me on Twitter at Sydney_Williams. On Facebook, it's Sydney Williams Books, or at Sydney Williams Books. And those are the biggies, I guess. I'm not on TikTok. I have a TikTok.
That's all right. Account,
but I don't really not geared toward lip syncing. So
fair enough. Well, it was really great talking with you, Sydney.
Thank you. Nice to meet you today.
Yeah, you have yourself a great day.
You too. Take care.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.